March marks the shifting of seasons here in Central Texas, where the landscape gives way to blooms of bluebonnet fields, and we welcome the return of all things green. A renewal of sorts. But what if you find yourself, despite the change in the weather, still navigating this same storm? Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexity of chronic illness. Today, we are joined by Jamie Tanner, the brilliant mind behind Simple Sparrow Farm. Join us as she shares about the restorative benefits and tremendous healing that can flourish in tending to the gardens and in the sweet companionship of all the animals that call her care farm home. This is Jamie.
Hello, my name is Jamie Tanner. I am the founder and volunteer CEO at Simple Sparrow Care Farm. So the Care Farm has been a registered 501c3 nonprofit for about 5 years, but I have had the farm for over 10 years. And it started off as my hobby farm. And when we were observing the benefits in other people, and myself in particular, I started researching some different models of therapy and ecotherapy, animal-assisted stuff, and then I came across this model called care farming.
Can you explain maybe to our listeners who may not be as knowledgeable about care farming, kind of what the philosophy behind it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So Simple Sparrow started off as my hobby farm, and I have significant childhood trauma in my background. I was also a combat medic in the Army, so I picked up some more really proper trauma through that whole experience. And for me, being outside, working the land, gardening, raising animals, being on a farm was very healing and therapeutic for me personally. My husband is an electrical engineer, and so the farm isn't really his thing. It wouldn't be a good place for him to recover from anything. For me, it was just so life-giving. So when I started just observing how the farm really helped me learn and grow and heal, I started inviting other people out to use the farm. And we started observing just really incredible growth in people. I started hearing stories about how other individuals who had gone through trauma, like other veterans, how they found like true healing at the farm. People were telling me, you know, because of their opportunity to come out and learn how to raise chicks at the farm, they found a new purpose in life and they had been contemplating suicide. And coming out and just learning to care for the land, gardens, and animals gave them a reason to stay alive. So I started researching these models of ecotherapy, animal-assisted therapy, and there wasn't a lot of information or research in the U.S. on these types of therapeutic interventions. I started kind of widening my search and I came across a model called care farming. Care farms have been around Europe since post-World War II. The history of care farming actually was a way for the European economies to rebuild after World War II. And the people that were qualified for other jobs, they left the farms, which meant that there wasn't anybody growing the food or, producing other things to help, you know, feed everybody as they were rebuilding their economy. Pre-World War II, a lot of individuals with special needs, mental illnesses, all those kinds of things, they were put away in asylums. They were considered not okay to be in civilized society. So they were sequestered, they were put away. The world wars broke that down. There was no place to put these people any longer. And so instead of keeping them in asylums and, you know, keeping them out of communities, they started inviting them to come to the farms and work the land and learn farming skills. And what they found is that not only did these individuals with special needs and mental illnesses do really well, and they were very helpful for community because now they were growing food and feeding their community. But they also, as individuals, healed and found that they really do matter, that they are dignified as people and their lives have a purpose. And even though they might be different than the social neurotypical, they still matter and they can still contribute. So that was very impactful for a lot of European countries, again, not only to help rebuild the economy and have a consistent food supply, but then also for these individuals to say, you know what, I really do matter. And the way of doing things in the past of shutting these people out of community, this was a huge movement for a progressive movement to get them back into the society, back into community. So it's really just grown from that. What care farms look like now, they're extremely diverse. When we talk about care farming, what we're talking about is how to utilize farm nature for a therapeutic or an educational intervention. So again, historically, the care farm model in Europe, what's very popular is vocational opportunities for adults with special needs. They also have care farms that provide transitional types of residencies for individuals who are recovering from addiction, adults who have been incarcerated, people who are struggling and healing through a mental illness, providing the farm as a way that they can regulate the brain, mind, and body. They can realize their full potential as a precious, incredible human being and help society thrive and prosper. The types of models throughout Europe, the majority of them, again, are going to be the vocational opportunities for special needs. They have a few that they would call a therapy farm. If Simple Sparrow were in Europe, we would be a therapy farm because we have therapists that meet clients out here. And then there's also types of care farms that are called social farms and gardens. And so this would be similar to like an American community garden, where you have a neighborhood or maybe a retirement community that they dedicate a piece of land where multiple people can go and garden. Maybe they don't have a yard or they have an apartment. I know in like suburban or urban areas, cities, a lot of people live in apartments, duplexes, and so you don't have a yard. And so having a community garden, it gets people growing their own food, being sustainable, having opportunities to socialize with other people who are interested in gardening. In Europe, they actually have a designation for that, and that's the social farm and garden. And there's certain communities in England, Norway, Holland, where they don't just do these gardens, these social gardens, but the social farms. And so you might have a village where they're raising chickens together, or they raise a little dairy goat herd together. So they've really expanded it beyond just the garden.
Gosh, that's fascinating. And I love, it can be land that maybe wasn't being used that now can be utilized to build rapport and relationships among your neighbors in your community, but also give that need for purpose and that feeling that you belong.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, when you were doing your research, because so many of the models were overseas, did you have the opportunity to go visit any care farms or social farms in other countries?
Yeah. So when I started finding these care farm models, that was in like 2016 is when I really became aware of this model, that it was working. I learned that there were over 1,200 care farms in Holland. There are thousands of care farms in the UK and Norway. I was not able to go visit any of them. One, because I was working on my master's. And then two, financially, I couldn't afford it. Yeah. A lot of these care farms, they are a part of coalitions in Europe. So the UK has a social farm and garden coalition. And I was able to reach out to those directors and get a ton of information. They really helped get me started on researching care farm models. They put me in contact with care farm researchers all over Europe. So I was able to connect very easily to learn more about their models. They would send pictures. A lot of care farms, they post things online. They are really happy to talk about what they do, how they're utilizing farm nature, who is the particular demographic they serve, and all that. So I really felt like I could get substantial information. And then I was able to assess and look at our community's needs in Central Texas and very easily be able to apply the principles of care farming based on the European model to our area here and how we could use that care farming model but customize it where it serves Central Texans.
And I love how your care farm, having visited it several times and my whole family has come out to the farm before, I love how the farm has grown and changed over the years. It's just this constant transformative model where the more people that pour into it, the more you're able to provide.
What's really exciting to you about care farming, it is a very customizable model, which makes it where you can intentionally serve your community in a very relevant, respectful way. But also, it's so customizable that there are so many different models, it makes it very difficult to actually study and research care farming. Again, what we're looking at with care farms is how to utilize farm nature for a therapeutic or an educational intervention. At Simple Sparrow, what we do, our model is based in Christian theology, so Judeo-Christian theology of creation that come from a point where we believe that there is a good, loving God who created everything, and God created humankind for a loving community, to be in that community with the purpose of stewarding God's creation. We don't expect people to agree with us. That's not a requirement to come out here for services, but we really rely on that theology to inform our direction. And then we take that spiritual care component, that belief system, and we combine it with trauma-informed care. And so that is what makes our model very unique in the global economy of care farming. Again, because of the Judeo-Christian theology starting point, and then also that trauma-informed care. And it also just, again, informs our practices, how we approach personal relationships, how are we going to approach the land, how do we think about people. You know, if we believe that God made humans as made in his image, Imago Dei, that automatically tells us that everyone has value and everyone has a purpose. And it doesn't matter your age, your background, your ability, you are made for a reason. And that reason is to be loved, to be in a loving community, to love others, and to care for this earth with other people. And so Simple Sparrow, we teach people how to care for land, gardens, and animals. And what we have observed is that they are then better able to care for themselves and others.
How would somebody find out about a care farm in their community? Maybe if they don't live in the Central Texas area, what would you recommend them going about and finding?
Well, really exciting, great news. There is a brand new care farming network that just started in the U.S. last summer. It's called the carefarmingnetwork.org. So you can Google carefarmingnetwork.org. This is the first ever care farming network in the U.S., and it is a coalition of U.S. care farmers that come together. We have monthly meetings. They're online. We hear from other care farmers throughout the U.S. What is their model? How are they implementing it? How did they set up? Are they a nonprofit? Are they for-profit? All of the things. Like, there's just such great information in these monthly meetings. There's information on their website. They have a directory. One of the challenges right now for U.S. care farmers is that language. And you know, we use language to communicate an idea or a concept. Most people in the U.S. have never heard of care farming. A lot of people have heard of equestrian psychotherapy or horse therapy. In Europe, they consider horse therapy a part of a care farm. Again, it's utilizing farm nature for therapy intervention. So in the U.S., there's actually several people that are already doing care farming. They just don't have that language. They don't have that definition that frames it like care farming. So the carefarmingnetwork.org is a great starting point. Also, even just looking locally at farms, there's several different organizations that are setting up community gardens. They have running farms where they're intentionally employing special needs adults, or they're intentionally employing people who have been incarcerated and those individuals are looking to rebuild their lives. So they might not call themselves a care farm, but that's what they're doing. And again, it's that mindset of not just looking at a farm for a food source, which it can be that. It's looking at what are some of the other benefits and uses of a farm. How do we utilize this to benefit people and the farm and the land, right? And the gardens. So it's just kind of shifting a little bit of our thought. But that's where I would start.
That's incredible. And how exciting to see it grow, especially looking back at 2016, you can probably see tremendous growth because all the research you were looking for, you had to look abroad.
Yes. Yes. And now we're doing a lot of that research now. And I'm so fortunate because from the very beginning, it really mattered to me that our model was credible and it was verifiable. And so everything here at Simple Sparrow is evidence-based and it's evidence-supported. It really mattered to me that I had the backing of research. And so working with Care Farmers internationally and those researchers, we've been able to replicate their studies, which is really encouraging. And yeah, we have a research committee at Simple Sparrow. It's just really incredible to see these care farm programs that we've developed and evaluated. We see that they're working. We're able to show and demonstrate that the care farm model improves mental health outcomes, it improves quality of life, and that's really exciting. That's what we're here for.
Well, so much of the community at Wonders and Worries are caregivers that are currently enduring chronic illness or have someone in their family that has had chronic illness and maybe have died or are in different stages of recovery. What kind of benefits do you see Simple Sparrow providing that medical community?
So I'm actually a hospice chaplain. One of the things early on, even before I became a hospice chaplain, was looking at how we could really love people where they're at. And again, how do we utilize farm nature to do that? Ultimately, it's about that relational connection, right? It's being community, it's loving people, and it's utilizing farm nature to do that, to foster those relational connections. So I would visit hospice facilities with small farm animals, and the hope that it gave people, I think a reminder that even if you're not going to be here on this side of Earth and in this place with us, life is going to continue on. And I think that truth and having that peace that we have to say goodbye, but there's more to come. And the comfort, I think, that animals bring people. I remember, this was several years ago. I was bringing animals into a memory care facility at a nursing home here in Georgetown, Texas. And there was a gentleman I had heard of that loved animals. And he had started transitioning. And so he was no longer communicating verbally. He was refusing food and drink. And he was sleeping most of the time. And it was, his death was imminent. And his daughter saw me and asked if I could bring the rabbit into his room. And I brought the rabbit with me into his room, and I set the bunny down next to this gentleman and held his hand and put his hand on the rabbit. And he started petting the rabbit. And he had been unresponsive for days. And he didn't open his eyes, but he just held the rabbit and patted it. And I don't know that he was even able to communicate anything more than that, but I mean, we all just started crying because he still was communicating, and that animal brought him comfort, and not just him, it brought his daughter comfort, you know, that, and it was just that little sign. He was still with us, but he was going. And I think that just matters so much as we interact with one another, how we can love and stay connected, even in those little ways. As people,
the benefit of a farm being so family focused is even if it's just one person in the family that has experienced trauma, which very often is not the case. Typically, if one person in a family is going through something, we know from family systems theory that this just affects everybody in its own unique way. So when families come out to the farm, I love that the value of healing can be individualized to each person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's incredible. Do you do work with schools as well? Or
yes, we do. Yeah, we are a very collaborative nonprofit. When I started dreaming up and imagining what Simple Sparrow would look like, it mattered a great deal to me that we became an organization that worked with other organizations, that we are not in a mindset of competing, but that we are here to complement and collaborate and help other organizations flourish. I mean, that's really our focus. And so school districts, we are a partner with Georgetown ISD. We've also done a lot of work at schools in Round Rock, some Cedar Park schools. And what those programs look like, they're focused more on an educational awareness of being able to talk about how the brain, mind, and body are impacted by stress and trauma. And what we see is a lot of young kids and adolescents, especially, who are really struggling with depression and anxiety. And so when we can, oh gosh, I think Mr. Rogers says this, if we can mention it, we can manage it, right?
Yes.
And so when we can talk about how the brain, mind, and body are wired together and how these stresses and these traumas, they're going to affect us. And if we can identify that and put words to it, all of a sudden now people have clarity. Maybe they were phrased or defined as like a behavioral problem kid or whatever. And teaching them how their brain, mind, and body responds to stress, maybe they learn, oh, I'm really not a problem person. My brain, mind, and body are reacting exactly how they were made to react. I was having a stress response, you know, instead of being compliant, I got triggered and I went into flight mode. And it's not because I'm a horrible person. It's because I got triggered and that's how my brain works. And so we do see a lot of, I think, clarity for these kids. And then also hope that when you can talk about it, you can deal with it. And then, we bring in a lot of animals, of course. I'm kind of known for bringing rabbits and snakes to schools because the snake does a great job of eliciting a stress response. And so we want to help people understand what a trigger feels like. And if you haven't gone through a significant traumatic event, it's really hard to understand, you know, what's wrong with people, you know, that right. And with trauma-informed care, we don't look at people and say, you know, what's wrong with you? Right. We want to say, okay, what happened to you? There's something that you went through that you are reacting now in this way. And so how can we increase our compassion, lower our expectations, and then teach young people to do that? Give them the eyes to see and to understand. So the snake is great for getting people into fight, flight, or freeze. I almost always have a teacher or my favorite is the principals. If they're a big, tough guy, it's really amazing how many big, tough men are just absolutely terrified of snakes. So we're very respectful, but we do give the students an opportunity to observe their principal going through a stress response and being uncomfortable being around the snake and the different body language and behaviors that, you know, stress can elicit in a person. And so we create this safe environment where they can observe that stress response. And then it opens the floor up to then discuss, you know, how can we provide a felt safety? You know, your principal, he doesn't feel safe with the snake. And I want to be a good friend and I want to be a kind friend. And it matters that he trusts me. So I'm not going to put the snake in his face. I'm going to take the bunny out now. And, you know, Mr. Principal, how do you feel with the bunny? Oh, you feel calmer. You feel safer. We feel a better relational connection. And so it's teaching an awareness to know that this is what happens with stress. It does change people's behavior. How do you identify those behaviors? And then how do you create a felt safety for that meaningful relational connection? When you can experience it, you learn it better. And then it goes out and you can replicate that for people in your personal relationships. You can identify the need in yourself to help set up better relational boundaries for you. Maybe there's a kid that nobody respected their boundaries and they didn't feel safe. And so maybe that kind of gives them clarity with those personal relationships, like, oh, that's why this relationship isn't going well, because I don't feel safe with this person. They don't respect my boundaries. I am having a stress response and I'm not calming down. And so it just helps them, again, identify and hopefully be able to articulate and, you know, learn their behaviors, grow and heal. Wash, rinse, repeat.
Exactly. Now, if somebody was listening and does live in the area, how do they go about connecting with the farm? What is the best way? Are you appointment-based? Are you insurance-based, fee-based? How does your model work?
Yeah, great questions. So you can find all of the information about us at simplesparrow.farm. Our model is that we have different programs and services, and we are by appointment only, except when we have special events. So coming up in March, every Saturday, 10 to 2, we have Chickapalooza. So you don't need to make an appointment for that. Just show up any Saturday in March, 10 to 2. So the other programs and services, we do want to make sure that we have staff to assist people. The big difference with us as a care farm versus like Sweet Eats Farm or Sweetberry Farm is we're not a petting zoo. We're not a place where people can just show up and have a picnic. We are very intentional about teaching people how to care for land, gardens, and animals. And so that requires that we have well-trained staff. All of our staff are trained in trauma-informed care. We want to teach people proper handling techniques of the animals. It's not just like we let people go in the pens and grab them themselves. So there's information on our website about private farm visits. We host school groups out here. We host Bible studies, book studies even. We're doing that. So all that information is online. And as far as making an appointment with a therapist, all of the therapists that office at Simple Sparrow, they actually rent their office from us. And so that helps us as a nonprofit be more sustainable. And those therapists are all working independently, so they're all licensed and insured. Not all of them take insurance, but they are paying Simple Sparrow to use the land, to use the office space. And then also we provide training to these therapists on trauma-informed care and what are proper handling techniques for the animals. And if you are a therapist and you would be interested in meeting clients out here, you can contact us. Send an email to office@simplesparrow.farm. And we're happy to get you that information.
I think it's just so incredible. And how much it's always changing. Can you give, just because it's a fascinating thought to think how something that started as just a passion for you mm-hmm. has grown into this gift for so many in the community, in a general day on the farm, what might you encounter?
During the school year, we have different community groups that might come out to volunteer. We do host like the Community Montessori School in Georgetown. They come out weekly. We get certain students that need volunteer hours for National Honor Society, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you name it. So we host generally 40 to 50 volunteers a week.
That's so many. Yes.
Staff is here to show them how to care for the land, gardens, and animals, and then to ensure that it gets done correctly and safely. So our staff at the farm, their main focus is first people, is teaching people how to do some of these farming things. And then answering any questions, helping people feel comfortable and confident gardening or caring for the chicks, the chickens, even looking at the eggs. Day to day, we do see a lot of volunteers. Sometimes we have really large groups that come out, which is amazing. Like the Young Men's Service League came out, and that was, I think, 100 volunteers over a weekend or something. It was a very large group. That doesn't happen very often, but there's always work at a farm, and we're always happy to dream up projects that we need done or things on our bucket list that we would love to see happen. And so that's where these volunteers really help that come to fruition. So for me personally, as the volunteer CEO, what I get to do is talk a lot about the care farm model. I'm actually getting my doctorate right now. We're doing the research on the outcomes of care farming, and my dissertation is actually a program development and evaluation of a training program. So I get to teach other people how to care farm. I get to talk to a lot of people who have questions, a lot of therapists or farmers who might be hobby farming, and they want to know how to start a care farm. How can they make a bigger impact in their community? How can they serve at-risk individuals through a garden? Or how can they start getting involved in helping refugees? So those kinds of things. We serve a lot of people, basically anyone in our community who want to learn how to care, how to do these little hobby farming things. I get to interact with all different kinds of amazing people throughout my week. Some days I go to schools and I give presentations. Other days I'm in the garden with, you know, refugee families. Other days I'm holding bunnies with survivors of sex trafficking. And then sometimes too, I get to go to hospice facilities and sit and pray with people and just bring them comfort and joy. And then the board meetings and day-to-day stuff. We have an amazing staff. We have great managers and people who see things run smoothly on a day-to-day basis at the farm. So that lets me have more time to teach other people how to do it and talk about the care farm.
Do you have a favorite animal that somebody might see at the farm?
Oh, man. I have a couple of my favorites. I think our most known troublemaker would be our llama. His name is Jacopo. He's just so incredibly unique. You know, llamas are getting so popular. And our llama is the biggest jerk I've ever met. He is fantastic. And we want him to stay a jerk. So he is our herd guard. I have a small dairy goat herd that I started when I was just doing hobby farming. And we have coyotes out here. And so we needed, I was trying to create an ecosystem with the land and the gardens and the animals where they could all kind of benefit each other. So with the llama, he protects the goats from coyotes. And so that keeps them safe. And that makes him a little bit of a danger out here. He knows what belongs in the barnyard and what doesn't. So he is known to spit at people if they get too close to him. He will bump people. He has sat on people. he was, you know, communicating with his body language that he was having a stress response. And sometimes people don't observe that. They don't think like a llama. So the person he sat on was totally fine. She thought it was hilarious. I was mortified, but she's fine and all is good. But it's Jacopo the llama, very well known. And then another of my favorite animals is she's my very first dairy goat. Her name is Reese's, and she's our grandma of the dairy goat herd. And she's just so sweet, and she's got the sweetest little Mona Lisa smile. And that doesn't make sense for a goat to smile, but if you've had goats, you know what I'm talking about. Goats give you a sweet little smile. We get a lot of animal donations. So like I said, this started off as my hobby farm. So I did start off raising a small dairy goat herd, raising them so that they would feel safe with me. That was kind of the first step, is creating a felt safety. It applies to humans and animals. And so you want to have a good relationship built up with your herd, especially dairy goats, because I want them to stand still on the milk stand when I'm milking them. And if they don't know me, if we don't have that relational connection, they're going to kick the bucket and make a mess and I won't have the milk. We were, you know, breeding these goats and getting babies and milking. And so we have some baby goat kids running around right now. Our other animals, a lot of them have been donated or owners surrendered from people who were raising farm animals and could no longer care for them. The doves that you mentioned, our pigs, several of our rabbits, they were donated by a petting zoo that had to close during the pandemic. Oh, and the mini horse, she also came from that petting zoo. So yeah, we were really happy to take these animals on and give them a good home. And A lot of our rabbits, they have also been donated, and they're not great candidates for therapy. Some of them get really kicky or they're aggressive. We do intentionally try to spend time with them, petting them, giving them celery or grass to help, again, develop that relational connection, create that felt safety. And we take those moments with people who also have gone through trauma and who need to also learn felt safety. And we create those opportunities for them to care for these rabbits. And often together, they heal each other. We've seen several situations like that where volunteers were coming out to the farm. They came from just a really hard place. And we paired them with a rabbit, and they would come and care for that rabbit every week. And after several weeks or months, they built a bond and ended up adopting the rabbit. And that rabbit got gentle because it started trusting a person, and that person healed because they learned that they could trust again. We get a lot of rooster donations too, but I don't need any more roosters. So
no roosters.
I don't need any more roosters. They're great, but we have so many now.
They just need to keep them. Keep your roosters.
Yes.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you think that I forgot to mention or that you want to share about farm life or care farming in general or anything else you want to say?
Oh, man. One of the things, too, I just love about it is I really do believe every human, regardless of your age, your background, your ability, you're here for a purpose, that your life matters. And so whatever it is that you're passionate about stewarding, whether it's a garden, animals, people, no matter what it is, I hope you find your flourishing. And if you are curious about the care farm, that's our big passion, too. We want to help you find what helps you flourish. You are an important, amazing, valuable person. And sometimes we just need opportunities to see that and to experience it.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.